Hey everybody, Marcus here. This is going to be the final video in my series on philosophical method. In the first video, we covered Plato's overarching metaphysical view on the breakdown of reality and how it relates to knowledge. We saw Socrates introduce the allegory of the divided line, in which he separates the visible world from the intelligible world. The visible world had at its lowest point the realm of shadows, followed by the physical realm above that. Once we stepped out of the visible world into the intelligible world, we entered into the hypothetical realm, and finally, at the highest point, into the realm of the forms. As we made our way up the divided line, we saw that we were creeping closer to truth as the objects of study became more real. In the second part of this series, we talked about the Socratic method, and more specifically, dialectic. Dialectic, which followed a process of question and answer, elenchus, aporia, and synthesis, was developed by Socrates in order to inquire into the objects of the intelligible realms as opposed to those of the visible realm. As the objects of the intelligible realms have no extension, meaning they cannot be experienced with the senses, clearly the method used to discover the essences of those objects would not be similar to the methods used in discovering anything about visible objects. For Socrates, to possess knowledge was to possess an account of the specific forms in the realm of the forms, as the forms are the eternal, unchanging objects of reality. Now, in this video, I want to present to you the hypothetical method. The hypothetical method was developed by Socrates as a positive method that would allow for discovering properties, not essences, about intelligible objects. At this point, I want to make a distinction between the essence of a form as opposed to a property of a form. To know the essence of a form is to possess knowledge of the form. When you can successfully account for what something is, meaning that you can give a successful account of the essence of a thing, you will know all its properties. However, the opposite is not true. You cannot come to know the essence of a thing through coming to know its properties. In fact, you cannot come to knowledge through the properties because the properties will never give you an account of the unity. We explore this subject in a little bit of depth in the second video. To recall, an account of the essence of a thing requires you to be able to account for the unity of the thing without reducing it to its parts, and you must also not give an account of the parts by reducing them to the unity. This means that a human being is made up of arms, legs, a heart, liver, you know, and so forth. But it also means that there's an aspect where it's more than the sum of all these parts. And the unity of what a human being is cannot simply be reduced to the parts themselves. In the same way, what is more than the sum of its parts is not justification for the parts themselves. So, dialectic, as we have seen, is a form of inquiry that argues towards first principles, towards the essences of the forms. Dialectic then becomes the conduit to possessing knowledge. The hypothetical method works in the opposite direction. The hypothetical method argues from first principles, and as such, can never come to give an account of an essence. Okay, I know this is probably sounding very confusing and cryptic, so let us try and ground it with a simple example. Let us compare the Socratic method to the scientific method first. The first step of the scientific method is to wonder about why something in the natural world happens in the way that it does. The second step is to put forward a hypothesis, you know, some plausible answer from which some empirically testable predictions can be made. Thirdly, we can construct and perform an experiment, which makes it possible to observe whether the predictions specified in the previous step hold up. If they do not, we need to go back to the second step and change or refine our hypothesis based on the observations we have made. If none of the predictions occurred, then we must come up with a completely new hypothesis. If some of our predictions came true, then we must refine our hypothesis to accommodate the exceptions. When we have our refined hypothesis, we once again subject it to experiment and see what happens. If, however, all our predictions are observed in the experiment, then we need to provisionally accept our hypothesis as true. Now, let us take a look at how this plays itself out in the Socratic method, as we have described in part 2 of this video series. In step 1 of dialectic, we pose a question of the what is X format. So, What is justice? Or what is piety? The second step is to offer a definition of X. You know, like we saw Euthyphro do when he said that piety is that which is loved by the gods. Now, in step 3 of dialectic, we subject the definition posed in step 2 to the Elenchus. If we outright refute or find a counterexample to the definition provided in step 2, we need to go back to step 2 and provide a new definition, or we need to refine our existing definition to accommodate the counterexample. If we refine our account, then what we have basically done is fuse our hypothesis with an antithetical example. This yields a new definition, which is a synthesis of the old definition and the fused counterexample. Having created this synthesis, we again go back to step 3 and subject this new definition to the Elenchus. If the definition stands up to Elenchus, we must accept the definition as provisionally true. You see, the scientific method and the Socratic method operate in a very similar manner. The difference is that the Socratic method works on intelligible objects, while the scientific method works on visible objects. Or should I say, the Socratic method works in the intelligible realms, while the scientific method works in the visible realms. Both methods, however, attempt to inquire towards first principles. Now, having said all this, what then is the hypothetical method as described by Socrates? Well, perhaps this is going to be easier to explain if we analogize it back to modern science. Think of the concept of a black hole. Where did this idea come from? Well, it came from the equations of general relativity. No one ran across a black hole in the sky. No one even imagined such a creature existed. What did happen was that Einstein posed his hypothesis of general relativity as part of the scientific method, and this eventually resulted in the equations that accounted for it. The equations of general relativity is the account of general relativity. Those equations were subjected to experiment, and the predictions made were indeed observed, and so the equations of general relativity were accepted as provisionally true. With the hypothesis of the equations of general relativity now accepted as true, other scientists started screwing around with them to see what would happen. On what such mathematical adventure, when certain variables were set to certain values, scientists found that there must be a creature with an infinite mass taking up zero space. Now, this outcome of screwing around with the equations was the creature we now know as a black hole, though no one had ever seen one or even imagined one before that point. So this screwing around with the equations informed scientists that black holes exist, but nothing was known about them. So this was the hypothetical method in action. The hypothetical method is when you accept the hypothesis as true and then try and find out what necessarily follows from this hypothesis. You see, where the Socratic and scientific methods argue to first principles, the hypothetical method argues from first principles to see what else must be true if the hypothesis is true. Though the scientific method was used to uncover the essence of general relativity, as it were, it gave us nothing more than the indication of the existence of black holes and told us absolutely nothing about black holes. Today, scientists are trying to use the scientific method on black holes to learn of their essence. In this same way, Socrates saw the hypothetical method as something that gives us positive outcomes but tells us nothing of the essences of things. It is only a means of discovering properties but not essences. Like in science, the hypothetical method will tell us nothing of the essence of the black hole, but the scientific method will. So too, in philosophy, the hypothetical method can tell us only very peripheral information about metaphysical objects, but it will take the Socratic method, dialectic, to learn of their essence. As such, the hypothetical method cannot lead to knowledge. Only dialectic can. Now, we must also look at the dangers of the hypothetical method. You see, if you accept a hypothesis as true, but it in fact is false, you'll be able to infer, you know, a completely messed up reality from it. You know, let me give you an example. The feminist notion of patriarchy. Okay. I would posit that, if nothing else, a feminist is someone who asserts patriarchy as a first principle. You know, a hypothesis they believe is true. Now, with this hypothesis in place, they can begin to argue on what else must necessarily be true. Let us take the Wikipedia account of the essence of patriarchy. Feminist theory defines patriarchy as an unjust social system that enforces gender roles and is oppressive to both men and women. Okay, sure, let's go with that. If this hypothesis is true, then it necessarily follows that enforcement of gender roles is unjust. From this, we must ask, is the enforcement unjust, or are the gender roles unjust? If the enforcement is unjust, then it follows that those institutions that enforce said roles are unjust. What is one institution that enforces gender roles? Marriage. Therefore, marriage is unjust. Also, let us posit that injustice is bad. Therefore, marriage should be abolished or reformed. Now, what if we take the other path, namely, that it is not the enforcement that is unjust, but that gender roles are unjust in themselves? As such, it would follow in this account that gender roles should be abandoned or reformed. Now, how would one reform a gender role? Well, if you invert the sex for the role, meaning a male becomes the woman, or a female becomes the man, then in essence we still have these roles, which as said earlier is unjust. Then a reformation of these roles would be to make them, you know, fluid. But if they are fluid, then they have no definition. As such, there is no difference between reforming the labels and abolishing them. Therefore, gender roles must be abolished. As gender roles must be abolished, so too would go the verbal signifiers, namely the pronouns he and she. The outcome? Swedish schools forcing the singular gender-neutral pronoun hen upon both the boys and girls. From this derivation, it necessarily follows that forcing the singular gender-neutral pronoun hen onto the children of Sweden is just. Now you can see how we have started from a hypothesis, namely patriarchy, and ended up with the absurdity of Swedish feminism. The danger with this method is that we can progressively derive truths further and further detached from reality, one absurd conclusion building on another absurd conclusion, and so on. However, when it is applied to something legitimately derived from the Socratic method or scientific method, we can get cool things like black holes. So to summarize, we have seen how the Socratic method is used in coming to first principles. We have seen how it can be used to construct a hypothesis through a repeated application of the Elenchus, while synthesizing an ever more solid account of the essence of a thing. Finally, we said that once we have a solid account of an essence of a thing, we can apply the hypothetical method in order to gain small insights into other objects, but that the hypothetical method will never lead us to knowledge. And there we have it, the hypothetical method. You know, I hope that after watching these three videos, you have gained an insight into the philosophical approach of tackling problems, and also I hope it helps you in reading philosophical texts as well as developing your own ideas. As an exercise, why don't you take a belief you hold, you know, something you are convinced is true, and apply the hypothetical method to see what else must necessarily follow from this belief? If you end up with a deduction that you think is complete nonsense, then this might mean that the hypothesis you set down might be false, or that you made a logical mistake along the way. If you do find such an absurdity, why not try and go back to dialectic and see if you can synthesize your initial hypothesis with this absurdity into a new hypothesis? For you video makers out there, the hypothetical method is a simple mechanism that you can use to generate new content. I mean, choose some MGTOW idea and just start hammering out all the conclusions that follow from it. At some point, you will most likely hit on an idea that you feel, you know, would be of great value to the community. Now, practicing this method is also an excellent way in developing your reasoning skills because it forces you to work with a very contained set of premises. Don't worry too much what the conclusions are, but focus on making sure that your logic is sound. Though it is very challenging to develop a high level of dialectical skills, it's not so tough to practice logic through hypothesis. And most importantly though, do not skip steps when practicing hypothesis. Show your work, as they say in elementary school. Thanks for listening. Go team.